Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Vaughn Hyde. I'm the host of IndiePod, an indie games podcast. With the help of my illustrious co-host, the biggest of average Josh Boys, we bring you all the indie games news you need to know, as well as shouting out some amazing indie games over on crowdfunding sites and occasionally derailing to a conversation about big anime chesticles. We are so happy to be part of the HP Video Game Podcast Network alongside so many other awesome gaming podcasts. So if you love indie games, make sure to listen in each and every Friday.
This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
Hey, yeah, you. Did you know that ArtCast is on Patreon? Go check out patreon.com/ArtCast for ways to help out the show and get some sweet perks in return. It could be something small, such as our $1 tier to show your support. Or join one of our higher tiers to get a shout-out, pick an episode topic, or even be a part of the show as a special guest. Even just sharing our show to your friends goes a long way. Once again, that's patreon.com/artcast. Thanks for helping us, and keep it retro. What's up, Argonauts, and welcome to another Retro Gaming Podcast. This is episode 206 of the ArtCast. I am your host, David Gilton, and with me are a couple of very special guests. Of course, with me is the ever-lovable Candace Shane. How's it going there, Candace?
Hi!
Also with us is Anne Schumann of Arcade Spirits. So how's it going there, Anne?
It's going. I'm alive, which I'm very thankful for. It's been a day, a month,
a month.
Year. I don't know what time is anymore, so... Yeah. You know, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, time is a little bit more of a construct now these days.
But, it is. Yeah, I keep having to be like, was that yesterday or 3 years ago? Get back to me on that.
Yeah, but you know what time it is, though, is for Arcade Spirits to come out on Switch, which it is coming out very, very soon, right?
Yeah, on Friday. I legitimately, it's Wednesday. I almost said it was Tuesday. And yeah, on Monday, I was like, wait, is May 1st? This Friday? And everyone was like, yeah. And I was like, holy shit, my game's coming out on console on Friday.
It's good to remind yourself every so often, yeah.
Yeah.
And can you tell people real quick what Arcade Spirits is all about?
Yeah, Arcade Spirits is a romantic comedy visual novel that takes place with the 1980s arcade crash Never Happened at All. You get to work in an arcade. You get to make your own character. You get to meet a whole bunch of cool people that visit the arcade. And if you want, you can find romance along the way.
It's true, and I love it.
Who did you romance, may I ask?
I was starting to romance. I'm trying to remember the first playthrough, but who was the cute old guy?
Percy?
Yes.
He's like the really sweet guy who's like into retro games, I think.
Yes, mm-hmm. That was the first one. And then I started going towards the guy who was trying to be the manager. I'm having a hard time remembering
Gavin.
Names.
It's okay. Yes.
Oh, Gavin, I
know them
right.
All very intimately.
Yes. It's funny, though, too, because like I keep trying to remember enough of it because I want my daughter to play it.
Oh, cute.
And yeah, and like she just recently started getting into visual novels.
Oh, that's so cute.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to download Arcade Spirits. You're really going to like it. And she's like, what's it about? And I go, I can't tell you a lot.
It's about love.
There's a lot of bright colors. Don't worry. It's fantastic.
Totally. A lot of people are excited here for Arcade Spirits. But before we get into that and also into like dating games in general, let's jump into the news here. Starting off here with Ziggurat Interactive acquiring over 30 3DO games. So apparently there are some games here including Captain Quasar, Killing Time, Requiem Avenging Angel, Uprising Join or Die, and Uprising Lead and Destroy. are now owned wholly by Ziggurat Interactive. It's pretty interesting to see some 3DO games getting some love here, and it looks like we'll be seeing some releases there coming to Steam and GOG, and possibly some consoles as well here. But and I was kind of curious, have you played the 3DO at all, or like any 3DO games?
I'm officially the worst game developer ever because I don't even know what a 3DO game is. I'm like, I'm sure like if you explained it to me, I'd be like, oh, that's what they're called. But yeah. I don't know, what are they?
I mean, the 3DO console was basically like a console that was ahead of its time. It was it was basically created by Trip Hawkins, who originally founded EA. And so he went off to basically create like his own company and to come out with his own console basically called the 3DO. And it had some problems with it like at launch, and it ultimately failed. But it was definitely a very interesting console that was trying to be ahead of its time, basically,
yeah,
but ended up being way too expensive.
If I recall, like, because it was the early 90s, it was a console essentially being made by some of the big deal tech people, like in televisions and electronics.
Like Panasonic.
Mm-hmm. Panasonic
and Sanyo and stuff. So, like, they really weren't about the gaming so much as the money aspect of it, so it didn't go very far. They didn't really understand what they were working
on. They totally ripped off the Sega Genesis controller. I'm just looking at it now on the internet. I was like, that looks like my Sega stuff. Mm-hmm. No, I never even heard of this when I was a kid in the 90s, and I never played it at all. So no, I have not played any 3DO games.
We did a 3DO episode not too long ago on the show here, but it was considered like ahead of its time because of the fact that like a lot of the games had full motion video, and that was very new back then and all that. So yeah.
Oh, you're exactly. An FMV fan as well?
Oh, let me tell you, I am the biggest FMV fan as well. Yes.
Well, we got two of the biggest FMV fans right here then.
Sorry, David. We have to talk about FMVs for a while because Phantasmagoria is like the best game ever made.
Yes.
Yep. Well, we did a whole FMV episode, so if you are interested in that, there is one that we did not too long ago with Candace, actually.
Uh-huh.
So that's definitely one to listen to there. But definitely interested to see where these 3DO games end up being or how they end up being, basically. So the next story that we want to get into here also is in regards to some Final Fantasy VII figures are coming out. So these aren't based on Final Fantasy VII Remake. These are based on the PS1 game.
I love it.
So they're in their full polygonal glory here, basically, including Cloud, Tifa, Barret, Aerith, Red 13, Sephiroth, and Reno from the Turks. So, so some really, really cool ones here, and they're available on the Square Enix store. I believe they're available right now for pre-order.
Oh, never order anything on the Square Enix store. I'm a little bit bitter about what happened to me and my copy of Final Fantasy VII First Class Soldier Edition. They royally fucked me over. So I'm a little bitter. I'm really excited about these though, especially the Sephiroth one because Sephiroth is my husband.
Of course,
you
know? Yeah.
did you see what it said though? They're packaged in blind boxes.
But then why does it say like because it says like $64. Is that for one blind box? That can't be right.
It says, now the listing of the Square Enix store may seem to suggest that you get all 8 figures with your purchase, but there's a bit of a sting there. In fact, as they're packaged in blind boxes, you can't be sure which ones you'll receive. God.
Okay, so it's probably like a collection of blind boxes and you never know which ones you might get. Yeah,
yeah. There's no way that everybody's going to get one of each.
Yeah, unless you trade back in the olden days or something. So
yeah, I mean, I would understand if you could do like, here's the full set, or because I know I love blind boxes. I think that's half the fun of it, right? Like Animal Crossing blind boxes, you're like, I love everybody, so it'll be fun. And if you just want to get one or two, that's fine. But especially like in such a prominent game with such a prominent history, like not to offer just a full set seems a little bit silly, but I guess I get it, Square Enix. You just want my money.
How much you want to bet though that Sephiroth's gonna be super rare? Right.
Oh, 100%. I would be willing to bet $64.
Oh, yeah.
That is super rare.
And Red and Reno are going to be super, super, like, you know, common.
Yeah.
And so people are going to get those Sephiroths, hike them way up online.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, God, like, that just sucks. Like, I love the concept of that for cute things, like you said, in Animal Crossing, stuff like that. But this is like, that's kind of a jerk move. Just like sell the whole series for folks.
Yeah.
Like don't make this a cash grab.
Yeah. Or do both. Do blind boxes and sell the whole package.
For sure.
Like that makes the most sense because I would even buy, like as a fan, I would buy the whole set and then even buy a couple blind boxes just because they're fun.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, like, you could even sell the full set for far more mm-hmm. than the blind boxes, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there'd be somebody out there who doesn't want to go through the blind box experience, but yet they still, you know, want to have the set, so they'll pay more.
Would there even be like a reason though for anyone to pick up the blind boxes if people could just pick up the figures they wanted? Or
if they're cheaper, and also like if you like that experience. I know plenty of people who like the concept of like dropping, you know, a few bucks on blind boxes and seeing what they get.
So it's a cheaper option, I guess, but it's a more random element to it.
Yeah, it's cheaper but random, and that's kind of like the gamble you take, you know. But like if the figurines are, say, like, I would say for the more quality ones, blind box wise, between like $7 and $10 a piece, right? And then if you then offer the whole set for like $100, $120.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's the full non-blind box set.
Just for the full set, yeah.
Right. And but like, you could possibly maybe get them cheaper, you know, if you offer the full set without the blind box for like a premium, like $120 or whatever, right? It's going to stop a lot of those people from hiking up the crazy prices of those individual figures online.
Be the smart thing if like a company actually tried to get, you know, to get ahead of the black market, basically, in that case, or like third parties. You know, I don't find like a lot of people really doing that though, unfortunately.
Release the full set for a premium, and then that way, if you want to encourage that whole that marketplace of people sharing their figurines back and forth and trading and all of that, it'll actually be more pure and authentic an experience than people going, well, how about $380 for Sephiroth? It's like, no, how about you eat my butt?
Welcome!
And that's going to lead us now into the part of the show called What Are You Playing? What gets some games we've all been playing or have recently beat. So, Anne, with you being a special guest, why don't you tell us what you've been playing?
Animal Crossing? And Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
That's about it. Yeah. I finally got my copy of Final Fantasy VII. I got a brand new computer. Ooh. And so now I'm able to stream PlayStation 4 games on my PC. So I've been playing that. And then Animal Crossing is the only thing like legitimately keeping me sane at this point with everything that's been happening in the world. Like,
I find that's the case for a lot of people, honestly.
Yeah, it's just like a good game where there's not a lot of pressure, right? There's so much pressure for everything in the world that we're dealing with. There's the pressure to be safe, the pressure to keep other people safe. Every time I look at the news, I feel like I'm going to have a panic attack. But like, you can dive into Animal Crossing and just like go fishing for 3 hours and be like, this is what I needed. This is great. I can go talk to my townsfolk. I can go sell some things. I can decorate my house. And it's like, you don't have to commit to anything. And there's just such a good, like, refreshing freedom about not having to worry about anything that's going on in your Animal Crossing village, except for maybe like you don't like one of your villagers and you're trying to get them out, you know?
Well, it's literally an island vacation that's right there on your Nintendo Switch, and you can just dive in at any point pretty much. So it's pretty ideal, honestly, especially during these times, for us to have access to that.
Yeah, I think Animal Crossing came out at such a pertinent, important time in all of our lives. And I'm just like imagining like 40 years in the future when we're all old and we're like, remember Animal Crossing?
Well, we'll still be playing Animal Crossing at that point, honestly.
Yeah, it'll be great. But yeah, those are the two games that I've been playing right now. I was like, do I have anything else? No, just those two.
Yeah. How are you enjoying Final Fantasy VII so far?
It's amazing. I'm only in chapter 4, I think. So I'm not that far because it took me a couple weeks to get everything set up and get my copy. But like, I am definitely one of those people, like when it was first announced, what, like 5 years ago, and it was the first trailer at E3, I was sobbing. Like, I was crying. I was so happy. Because I remember back when Final Fantasy X had just released, and I would like shoot the shit with my friends and was like, what if Final Fantasy VII was remade with Final Fantasy X graphics? And that like blew my mind. Like back in 2002, I was like, that would be the best day of my life. So I've literally been waiting for a Final Fantasy VII remake since Final Fantasy X. Mm-hmm. And when that was announced, I could not help myself. And I just cried tears of joy.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people are like that, honestly, too, because like that was the same E3, I think, when Shenmue 3 was revealed.
Oh, and yeah.
There was one other like really big announcement. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was like the E3 where dreams came true, basically.
Yeah. Oh, those moments. And so, yeah, and like I know, like leading up to Final Fantasy VII Remake, there's been a lot of haters out there that's like, ugh, it's not going to be like the original. But like literally for me, Square Enix could do anything and I'd be like, this is, thank you. Thank you. Let me kiss your toes, Square Enix, because this is exactly what I want. Yeah. I was like, I get to see Sephiroth in today's graphics. Like, I'm fucking happy. That's all I need in life.
Yeah, that's your husband right there in full glory right there. HD.
As I look at my Sephiroth wall scrolls in the room.
There you go. All right. How about you there, Candace?
I've been playing Animal Crossing. We know this. I think I have come close to finishing the renovations to my island for now.
Ooh.
For now.
And how's
Rodeo. We want to talk about Rodeo, huh?
Rodeo, yeah.
It's still there. I have put up protest signs. I I sell a shirt in my Able Sister shop that literally has a kick me sign etched into the back of it. And on the front is a crude drawing of Rodeo. I'm no pixel artist. an X on the front. And I have made it so that all of my villagers know to go buy it. And so they'll just walk around him wearing this shirt. No Rodeo. And
so you basically started like this petition within your island, more or less.
Yes,
so.
And it's not working. Like, I don't know what I have to do. Everybody like keeps sending me these articles. In fact, since talking about it on the show, I get quite a few people who will hit me up and give me articles about how to get rid of villagers that you don't want, right? It never works with him.
What are some of the things that people have told you to do?
They tell me to essentially harass him. To like talk to him over and over and over again, but like start talking to him, then like back out.
You can do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
There were people that told me to hit him with a net, and I did do that. That doesn't work. It just makes him like sassy for a minute. And he's all like, why are you hitting me? You're a jerk. And then I'm like, yo, shut up. And then he's like,
he's secretly
again.
Into it in that case.
Yeah. He's like, fine. Like 5 seconds later. I give him stuff he doesn't like. There's ignore him for days. I went days ignoring him. Days ignoring him. Nothing. If anything, it made him like me more.
Was Rodeo one of the first two that you got?
No. Rodeo I found on an island, on one of the Nook Islands, the Nook Mile Islands. And I already had my initial folks. And the reason I didn't want Rodeo, like I never wanted Rodeo. Because on the Nook Island, it was dark because it was nighttime. And there was a shadow of this big bull in the like distance, and it scared me. And then he's just got big red eyes. No, nothing else, just red dot, scary, terrifying eyes. And I was like, hey, guess what? I don't want to talk to you. I don't want you to move into my island. So I didn't talk to him. I didn't speak to him, and he still moved in the next day like a jerk. It was the worst. It was the worst, let me tell you.
He's like, your nightmare's here.
Yeah.
This seems like a nice island. I think I'll just park right here. Yeah, like so, right next to like your house or whatever.
And then so I like moved him to his own house all the way on the very like northeast corner. Like away from everybody. I built like barbed wire fences around his house. I essentially turned his place into a prison. I gave him a black and white striped shirt. I locked him in there with only a weight bench in front of his house. I dug up everything. I gave him pitfalls everywhere. Nothing matters. He still persists.
Pretty sure I shared the like pictures you shared with the with like no bullshit signs and all that. So.
Yeah, I've now gotten to a point of just a complete lack of caring. I let him live his life. I have not removed the signs nor the clothing. The protests still rage on. I'm not taking a part in it anymore. I've got bigger fish to fry right now.
It's going to be the second you don't care that he's going to be like, oh, by the way, moving on to bigger, better things.
Good. Good. I hope he does. What I find crazy is all the other villagers that I talk to pretty much nearly every day. Sometimes they'll just be huffing around and they'll be like, oh, I just feel like maybe you don't want me here anymore. And I'm like, what are you talking about, dude?
So, Candace, what if the secret is actually to be nice to him? What if that's actually the secret to get him to kicked off the island?
Then I guess he's going to live there forever.
Yeah. It's like, no way that's going
to
happen.
I am never going to be nice to that little ding dong. I can't handle it.
Oh my gosh. I really want you to make a YouTube series about you and Rodeo because like this is the drama that I want in my life. Like I love historical dramas and like I'm all about Animal Crossing drama. I have another friend who's been trying to get like three villagers off her island for a while and nothing is happening as well. And I'm like sitting on the sidelines, like eating popcorn, looking for updates on Twitter. Like what's going on? Listen.
I mean, we've been chronicling this drama honestly on this weeks. Show for weeks now at this point. So
yeah, it's
time
yeah.
to go listen to the backlog.
Yeah, it's
exactly.
It's
exactly.
Sad how much I've talked about this. Many people have come on and David's like, so what you've been playing? I'm like, well, let's talk about Rodeo's ass.
Well, I guess we'll stay tuned next week for Candace Island in that case.
Yeah, it's been a bit intense. Candace Island's a bit heavy duty. Other than that, I've been playing a little bit of Fallout. I tried to get back into GTA, but Rockstar's Rockstar, and they're just, you know, it's still a mess over there. And Fallout 76, tried to go back in there. It's a mess in there.
Is it? Really? Even after the update and everything?
And I was like, okay, well, I'm done with that. I don't
yeah, the
need
launch
to play
was terrible,
game.
Yeah.
Listen, Fallout 76 is the most confusing trash game that I've ever enjoyed playing sometimes.
I get it.
And yeah, and like the thing is I when I'm there and it works, it's so much fun. But find me the time when it works. You know, because like we were playing and then it was like, hey, we gotta take vendors out of the game. The vending machines are broken and people keep misusing them. So we're taking the vending machines offline for a bit, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, ew, gross. All right, well, we'll just come back and play tomorrow. And we go back to the next day. And my daughter and I are desperately just trying to play this game. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, vending machines are back. We're like, cool. All right. We play for a couple hours. And all of a sudden, stuff starts getting wonky. And we start noticing stuff's missing out of our inventory.
Oh, no.
And then we get kicked off because the PlayStation Network just goes down. So hard. And then all of a sudden we the PlayStation Network comes back. We try to get online and they've yanked the game down again because the NPCs have decided they know how to steal people's stuff. When
what?
They become sentient.
What? Yes. What in the Dalo shit is that?
I'm not
so Fallout
kidding.
76 basically turned into Westworld. Then.
Yeah. Yes. Holy shit.
So the NPCs, when you would die, would go to your body, your corpse, and just steal the stuff out of your like, they'd loot you.
Those and bastards.
That was right. It. Like, you would never get that stuff back ever. And it's like, cool. I mean, if I knew that was a feature, that'd be one thing.
Yeah.
A quote-unquote feature, yes.
I've lost so many things.
I feel like I want to know. I feel like that's not an error. Like, that's a very hard error to program in. Like, yeah, the NPCs just steal your loot.
Yeah, they're doing that. I was talking to a friend of mine who I can't say much about this friend, but they have a bit of information, right? And they were saying that they were even perplexed as into how to stop it. They literally just stopped it. They just got the NPCs to stop looting our corpses. So the game's been unplayable for days because if you die, the NPCs steal your shit. So I've been bouncing around from video game to video game to video game in some attempt to like enjoy myself away from Animal Crossing so like I don't burn out on it. But then every game I go into, some new fresh hell is there.
So, yeah. I'm crying. This is so hilarious. You're like going to Animal Crossing, it was getting shit. You go into Fallout 76, they're stealing your shit. Yeah. Like you just can't play video games right now.
No.
That's what the world is telling you.
No, that's pretty much what I've determined. So that's where I'm at now.
All right. As far as what I've been playing some Doom Eternal, actually. I started playing a little bit of it before Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, and then Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, so of course I devoted all my time to that, so
yeah,
I'm back in Doom Eternal. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I'm back in Doom Eternal, and I really love the 2016 game. Doom Eternal, I have some issues with, honestly. Like the, you know, the action is great and everything. I also like the new traversal system as well, like being able to like dash in the air and like latch on the walls and all that stuff. Like I love all that stuff. It's just that like there's so many systems and mechanics and like a lot of different things at play that makes the game feel needlessly complicated for like a Doom game, you know, because like Doom, I just kind of expect to just like run around, shoot things, whatever, and just have that be like the end of it, more or less. And it's just like a joy, and like, because I know that, you know, that Doom could do that. But like, it's just when they add in like all these like different things, like as far as like all these different modes for your guns and all these different like things you gotta collect in order to unlock like one skill tree or another skill tree, is just like, why can't you just like really streamline this, like just make, you know, just simplify it in a way that, I don't know, just like doesn't kind of get in the way, right, I guess, of everything else. And it just feels like it's just, you know, it's just too much, I guess, is what I'm getting at. So but otherwise I am enjoying it, but it's just like there are some things that kind of gets in the way. And I think overall, so far anyway, even though I'm very early in Eternal still, I remember enjoying my time with the 2016 game more, just, you know, just overall, just like, you know, just kind of just being able to jump in, go through a level, and that's it, just like level.
Yeah.
Aside from that too, I've also been playing XCOM Chimera Squad, which is the new XCOM game that
came out.
There's
a new XCOM game?
There's a new XCOM game. Jeez. Yep.
I gotta play the first one.
Yeah, you do, absolutely. XCOM and XCOM 2, honestly, those were both great. So XCOM Chimera Squad is kind of like a more like a focused game, like where you have like a team of very specific characters who you control, and they all have like their own abilities and skill trees and all that stuff. So you know, it kind of takes away from the heart attack moments, if you will, like where you like lose like a squad member and like, you know, so, you know, now you have to like replace them with someone else, or you know, so there is that aspect that's not there, but it's just kind of like more focused and more, I don't know, just kind of like smaller, I guess, because you're not like, you know, trying to basically save like humanity basically from the brink of extinction or anything like that. It's more of like playing XCOM cops, if you will, because you're like in this city now, like where it's like inhabited by basically everyone of all races, more or less. So you have like your humans, you have like the aliens themselves, you have like the snake people who used to be like the thin men. So yeah, you have like all sorts of like different people like at work there. And yeah, it's very cool and very interesting so far. So I'm definitely digging that. Cool. Aside from that too, I've also been kind of in a beat 'em up, you know, tinge right lately.
Yeah.
And so I've been playing Fightin' Rage, which is on Nintendo Switch. I believe it's on Steam as well. But yeah, this is basically like a beat 'em up, like where it gives you choices as you're going through it, and you can also like unlock like new like costumes and skins for like the characters who you play as, and like the characters have like, you know, moves that are very reminiscent to say like moves from like Final Fight or Streets of Rage or whatever. Yeah. So it's clearly kind of spoofing on all that, but also has a very Neo Geo Pocket Color kind of look to it,
right,
which I definitely appreciate. So
yeah.
So that's a lot of fun, and because I've been playing that actually before Streets of Rage 4 came out, and so I started playing Streets of Rage 4. And that game is just amazing. I've been waiting for Streets of Rage 4 to come out for like a while, because I basically played every single version of that game since it got announced during PAX West, I want to say. Like I played like the very early build at PAX West before they even had like their own like music or sound effects or anything like that.
Right.
And I've been playing it ever since then. And you know, so like now like the full game is out, or at least the full game will be out once this episode drops. And it is absolutely amazing. It is basically Streets of Rage for modern day platforms, and it's just incredible. Like it feels like Streets of Rage. It has like, you know, music that's very reminiscent of Streets of Rage, but it's like, you know, it's all new, but you can still unlock the old school music. You can also unlock the old school characters as well, like, so, you know, so there's like Streets of Rage 1 versions of characters, Streets of Rage 2 versions of characters, and it's just incredible. I just like honestly, if you like beat 'em ups, this is beat 'em up bliss. This is absolutely an amazing game. So definitely one to definitely check out if that's your jam. And one game here that might be your jam as well, if you're listening to this episode, is StarCrossed, which I have a game code to give away.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
So this is a Steam code. So StarCrossed is an action arcade game with a magical girl aesthetic and a cooperative twist. Join our cast of 5 spacefaring heroes as they travel across the stars, working together to strengthen their bond and defeat a looming evil that threatens the Nova Galaxy. It's time to team up, get sparkly, and take out the bad guys. So if that sounds like your jam, definitely jump on this. Again, this is a Steam code. The code is 5K6DZHWDZE3Z5W4. Again, that's StarCrossed on Steam. Enjoy, and if you do redeem that, definitely let us know at ArcPodcast on Twitter.
Okay, what if I just did it now, though?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Then you wouldn't be the first person to make that joke in that case.
Oh, I know. I've been here when people have made the joke.
Welcome back to the Stage of History.
And that's going to lead us now into the Stage of History, which is a celebration of retro titles that deserve a spot, for better or for worse, in the pantheons of history. So I figure since we are talking about dating in video games, I would mention basically the first game that came out in the States anyway, where you can date, which is Harvest Moon. So this is a 1997 farm simulation role-playing game by Amicus. When localized for North America, all references to alcohol were changed to juice, despite characters clearly becoming intoxicated anyway.
I love it.
Japanese elements remained in the localized version, such as eating rice balls and the TV news anchor bowing to the audience. And a Satellaview episodic version of the game was broadcasted with radio drama narration to help guide players.
That's so cute. I want to do stuff like that nowadays. That's so adorable.
Totally, yeah. So that was the thing that they were doing for the Satellaview version, and that actually reminds me that we'll have to do a Satellaview episode at some point, because there's a really cool Zelda game also along with that. Anne, I'll have you start off. Have you played the original Harvest Moon?
Maybe? I don't know.
It came out for Super Nintendo. So.
Oh, no. I was a Genesis person.
Ah, okay. You were the Genesis kid in the block.
Yeah. Sega did what Nintendo... The console war still rages.
It worked on you in that case. Yeah. Blast processing.
She remembers.
Yeah.
Never forget.
No. Have you played any Harvest Moon game in that case, sir?
I have. I've played a few Harvest Moons. I feel like on my DS... I think there was one on GameCube too. So basically, I think there was one on the 64, wasn't there? I feel like there's been
a Harvest Moon everywhere.
Yeah. So I've been playing Harvest Moon for a while, which I enjoy those. I also really like, I feel like Harvest Moon didn't then transitioned into Stardew Valley, but like Harvest Moon is so cute and wholesome. And I've always enjoyed playing Harvest Moon, but Harvest Moon is also one of those games where, like Animal Crossing, where I'm addicted to it for like 4 weeks and then I never touch it again. Right. I'm like, I've done enough farming. I'm good for until the next console comes out.
Yeah, that's kind of like how Stardew Valley was for me, because I remember really, really, really loving Harvest Moon, actually, on my Game Boy Color, actually. Because I think that was the second Harvest Moon game that came out in the States, I want to say. But I remember I was really, really into that, and I kind of was like in like the mood, I guess, to kind of get back into like a farm simulation game in that case. So I remember picking up Rune Factory 4 and Stardew Valley, and I played them both like for a bit, Stardew Valley a bit more, but I just couldn't really, really sink my teeth into either one of them, really. With like Harvest Moon, like in those like early days, I mean, that was like a very, very novel concept back then, as far as like a farm simulation game. It's like that just wasn't a thing back then, you know?
It wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, so it was very interesting in that case. And also the fact, too, that you can build relationships with people in town and actually get married to someone as well. So that was like a whole other concept that just wasn't, it wasn't a thing, at least in the States anyway. Candace, have you played Harvest Moon at all, or like the original one?
Have I played Harvest Moon? Let's discuss how much I played Harvest Moon.
Does this have its own episodic chronicles along with the two?
I mean, it could.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm ready.
I can turn anything into a soap opera. You give me like 15 minutes and a soda.
All right. Well, how about condensed version then?
I can give you the condensed version. But no, I got Harvest Moon came out like in the late 90s, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point, Super Nintendo games were pretty much exactly what you would imagine, right? There was nothing like Harvest Moon that existed when it came out. And because of that, it was like one of those kind of deep cuts, like especially with my friends and like the neighborhood that I, you know, all the kids that played video games, everybody was playing the typical stuff. And I remember going to Toys R Us with my mom, and we were looking, because like usually every weekend we would go look at games and see what like new stuff had come out. And I saw that one. I was like, I don't know what it is. I have no clue. I can't look at the box because it's up on that shelf.
Right.
But I can tell from the box art on that cartridge right there that that's going to be a Candace thing.
Because you had like the yellow tickets, I remember back then. You had to bring the yellow ticket over to like the booth to pick up your game.
So like you could, but you weren't allowed to touch it.
Exactly. Yeah. You could see, but you can't touch.
I could see the box art from the front and like it didn't tell me anything. I couldn't look at the back of it. So I'm just like, that's for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no way my brother's going to want to play this. And because, like, look at it. It's cute as hell. Like, he's trying to, you know, prove something to somebody somewhere, playing Doom all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm over here. I just want to do some farming and stuff. And I was wrong. And the amount of times he saved over my farm was painful. It's painful.
Yeah.
And probably led to more than a fair share of NHL characters getting
the return of Smatsky. Yeah.
Yeah. So I loved Harvest Moon. I followed the series through every system it was released on, even when they rebranded into Story of Seasons. Because at a certain point, Harvest Moon was not Harvest Moon anymore, because it was changing hands too many times. Like, they were selling off the properties. And so they had Story of Seasons. In fact, their most recent title, which is a very interesting thing, it's called Doraemon Story of Seasons, right? So it's Story of Seasons.
Wait, Doraemon, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is literally.
Weird. What?
I know.
It's coming out very soon, I think, right?
It's already out.
Oh, it's already out.
It's on Steam. You can play it. You can get on Steam, Switch, all of it. I have it. It's amazing.
I remember seeing that and I was like, Doraemon's coming to the States? Like, I was just like completely blindsided by that. Yeah.
Let me tell you though, the changes that they involved in this with the Doraemon Story of Seasons, it is still Harvest Moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because Doraemon is the main character and like the characters from like his, you know, series and all of that are in there, it's not about getting married and finding a partner and then this like farm that you have to raise for a certain amount of time. It's about helping these families reconnect in this village.
Mm.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So much more wholesome in that case.
It's, like, it's completely wholesome. It's incredibly sweet. And it's like these kids are with Doraemon and they get accidentally stuck, you know, in this other kind of, you know, place that they're not sure of. And all of the kids in this little, you know, small little town are kind of disconnecting with their parents and their families and they're having problems relating, you know, to their families.
Mm-hmm.
And so Doraemon and these kids like help, you know, these families reconnect and they don't, the game doesn't end until everybody's okay again.
Wow.
And like, until like you've helped everybody out.
And I'm not crying. You're crying.
Yeah, it's and let me tell you, it's visually
It's gorgeous.
Beautiful. It's like watercolor.
Yeah, I'm just looking up screen caps right now. And yeah, the watercolor like aesthetic is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And it is so visually appealing. The music is so sweet. It is like the most heartwarming anime that you could just watch and play at the same time.
Now, has Doraemon ever really been in the States, though? Like, because I can't remember any Doraemon game or series or anything like that.
No, but I mean, Natsume, I guess, got hands on the property and they were like, let's try and see if we can connect these two. And it worked because, I mean, I didn't expect it to work either. And then I played it and I was like, oh, no, this is fantastic. and I literally, that was the game I played to get me up to Animal Crossing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of any game where I can get dropped somewhere and given a house and a farm. And then you just
Is there a life sim type of game like that? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are my that's where I relax, you know. So I picked up Story of Seasons. And I was like, oh, I mean, this will get me to Animal Crossing. And then, like, I finished it and I was like, now what? Harvest Moon, I think, the really sweet part about Harvest Moon, and, like, a few times you can see, like, in the PlayStation, I want to say PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 era, they kind of missed the mark. And that was because it was getting heavily, heavily just monetized.
Like, I remember
those.
Yeah.
It was becoming a cash grab thing. They had the space version, which I'm fighting to remember the name of it, but it was like, I want to say it was like Innocent something.
It was still like a farm simulation game, but like in space, basically?
Yeah, but it was like on another planet kind of thing. Like it had a whole different space kind of vibe. The problem with those were you could feel that people didn't give a shit, you know, like they were just trying to quickly churn them out. And I was starting to lose faith in it because part of what made Harvest Moon so great is that there were just these little tiny bites of different things in there, but everything stayed kind of the same, but just a little bit more you know, pretty. It's just a little prettier, you know, like they weren't trying to reinvent anything.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is where Stardew Valley could make the jump to come in, right? Because Stardew Valley was an homage to Harvest Moon. It was meant to be
kind of going back to what Harvest Moon was back in the day. It was
trying to like honor Harvest Moon for what it started as. And that's what made Stardew Valley so good, right? And so Stardew Valley comes out and everybody's going ape shit for Stardew Valley because that's exactly what we wanted this whole time. Mm-hmm. Now, meanwhile, Harvest Moon's still churning out all these crappy games that are being made by other, you know, developers and publishers. Like, it's no longer in the hands of Natsume anymore.
Yeah, fortunately. Yeah. I mean, I've had on like some of the people from Natsume, actually, including Adam Fitch, I know, on the show, very early in the show, actually. And it really showed how much they cared for and loved that particular franchise, honestly, while they still had their hands on it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And like, you can just tell, like, you can look at, if you go on Steam right now and you look up Harvest Moon, you can tell just how far it has fallen. And then you look at Story of Seasons, which is the branded Harvest Moon that Natsume has, and it's gorgeous and it plays exactly like you want it to play. It is a game that there isn't a game to it. The game is showing up, you know, the game is spending time and being present.
It's more of an experience, I guess, than like a game, I guess.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's so many games, like I think about this all the time. If I could go back to tell young Candace, listen, I know you've got like 6 games right now and you're like, what am I going to do? I'm going to run out of these games and I'm never going to have more games.
I know you're really enjoying Tender Love and Care right now, but you got to check this out.
I wish I could go back and tell young Candace, like, there's going to be so many games, okay? You're going to have thousands by the time you are your mother's age, right?
What if I run out of games? Oh, my. If they could only see the way the game industry looks now.
Hey, everybody. It's Dustin from the HP Podcast.
And this is Ben. We're just coming here to tell you about our show, well, the HP Podcast.
The HP Podcast is a weekly video game podcast from HandsomePhantom.com that's also part of the HP Video Game Podcast Network. And Ben, it's a little hard to describe our show because it's a little bit of everything.
We get into a lot of shenanigans. We also talk about some news. We have some pretty serious topics sometimes. But sometimes our friend Brandon takes his shirt off and just does the show that way. So you should definitely check it out.
I think he got stuck to the seat last time.
It's possible.
So that was a time.
Yeah.
So anyway, check out our show. We would love that.
The HP Podcast.
And that's going to lead us now to our main topic, which is dating in video games. So,
Ooh, la la. Yeah, exactly.
And I figure since Anne is the resident expert here, if you will, on dating in video games, that you'd be very interesting to speak with about this. So I figure we'll start off actually with some of the earliest examples of dating mechanics in games. And the earliest one that I come up with here from my research was a 1984 game called Girl's Garden for the Sega SG-1000.
I don't even know this game. Hold on, I'm looking it
up. Yeah, definitely look that up there. But yeah, so it's basically a game like where you play as a girl and you're trying to like basically pick flowers in order to like win over a boy, more or less, if I recall correctly. But this game was actually the debut title of Sonic the Hedgehog co-creator Yuji Naka and Sega arcade game music composer Hiroshi Kawaguchi. And it has like its kind of historical significance in that sense. Otherwise, the game itself isn't like, you know, kind of like really all that well known, or like it's super obscure in that case. But it is like one of those like first games like where it is kind of like meant to target women. And also having like the main gameplay loop be about dating mechanics and wooing over someone, basically. So Anne, I was kind of curious, like, from what you've seen anyway from Girl's Garden there, but also like, what was like the first game that you can recall playing that had dating mechanics in it?
Yeah, so there's a little rare game that came out on the PlayStation. I think it was like 1999, called Thousand Arms.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Are you joking? What? I literally pulled up the Wikipedia to talk about that game tonight.
I am like, I'm going to cry. It's very hard to find other people that have played Thousand Arms. So when I get very excited about this game. So back in the day when I was a teenager, I loved JRPGs, hence like Final Fantasy VII. And, you know, this is one of those games that I just randomly picked up at the game store. And I was like, Thousand Arms, this seems cool. It's got like a cool anime like cover. There's a cute girl. There's a spunky hero guy. And then it was like a dating element. I was like, well, sure. Like I've written enough fan fiction by the time I was 15 that I was like, Thousand Arms seems good. And I played it and I was like obsessed. Like, this was the first game that I ever played that had a dating element in it. And for those of you that don't know, it's a JRPG, but you also get to play as, I think it's his name is Mice, right? The main character. Mm-hmm. And you have a plethora of ladies that join your group, and you can go on dates with them in between like the story arc, and like you can end up with one of them too. And it's just like, it blew my mind as like a 15 or 16 year old that like this was a thing, and I was like, dating in games?
It's kind of like a Sakura Wars, like a little bit in that sense.
Yeah, what was really crazy, so I the same thing happened to me. I had just finished Suikoden 2. And I went to find a new game because I was losing it, and I'd already played through Wild Arms and Wild Arms 2 over and over again. And nothing else going on. And then I saw this, and they had a like collector's edition.
Yeah,
like a map.
And, yes, like, I had that.
Yes, yes, yes. The map and the coin and the soundtrack and all the stuff with it. And I was like, okay, I don't even know what the hell's happening here, but I'm into it.
Yeah.
And I got home, and that was it. That was it. That was my entire life for like 6 weeks. It was just me sitting there on the floor playing this game over and over again, trying to figure out which one of these girls was going to make my sword better.
Yeah. Did you ever beat it?
No.
I got legitimately, this is one of the hardest games I've ever played.
It is. Too, it's so hard.
Because there's a point, it's not spoilers, but you get sent to another location. It's the final like area, and you literally cannot go back once you get to this location. And I was so underleveled at this location that I could not touch the final boss.
Oh, wow.
And so to this day, I have never beaten it. I actually had to look up the ending on YouTube like 10 years later.
Same thing.
I was so desperate to know what happened.
I mean, that sounds like a good game for you to stream there too, Anne.
Yeah, I should restream, and I have all my OG CDs too.
Listen, this game is so difficult, and also they tell you nothing. They tell you nothing. And also, David, you mentioned Sakura Wars. It's made by the same people.
Oh, Sakura Wars is by Atlas as well?
Yes. Mm. So,
that makes sense.
By Red Company. It's incredibly difficult. There was not another game I had ever played like it. And it became an obsession for me to find other games where like dating was a component
to
another style of gaming I loved. Because like, I can play an RPG and there's like a romance element to it, and I can like do all, and like it was a hardcore element. It wasn't just a side piece situation. You had to date in order to progress.
Mm-hmm. That was like the main core mechanic of the game. Yeah,
you needed those women in your life to make your weapons work.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't use a forge without these women. Do you understand? Like, it was intense.
So, Candace, were there any other like early games that you can call with the dating elements?
Honestly, that was the first one I ever played, and after that, I was just like, nothing else really was as intricate as that one. Mm. I mean, every game I had played that had somewhat of a dating element paled in comparison to Thousand Arms.
Agreed. Yeah.
Is this the same thing? You know, that was the first one I played. It was in the very late 90s. Mm-hmm. And after that, I saw like there was a resurgence in dating and romance stuff, but only within like, I would say, the past 5 years.
Yeah. I feel like, what year did the PSP come out? I feel like maybe like late, 2000s is when we saw a resurgence.
Yeah, it was like mid
2005.
Yeah.
2005.
March 2005.
Because I feel like it was, yeah, it was Thousand Arms, which had the dating element. And then there were, of course, other games where I made my own, like, ships of characters and stuff like that. But there wasn't a dating element until, like, I feel like the PSP came out. And then they actually started producing, like, Otome games, legit, which Otome games are basically dating sims targeted towards women,
right?
Where you have like a harem of beautiful men to date. And like it was Hakuoki was the first like major big one that actually got published on the PSP. And then it was like Sweet Fuse was another wonderful one. But that was, I think, the next big like surge of dating games we saw here in the United States.
So it kind of had like waves basically when dating games started to become like a thing pretty much. Yeah.
I think once we had systems that kind of made visual novels more portable.
Yeah.
I think that was when the resurgence happened. Cause if you look on even Vita, like if you look at like, cause there's still
tons
of them on Switch even.
Yeah, Switch has a lot of visual novels, honestly. It's crazy.
I found this out. It's so interesting. This really interesting thing that I just found out because Bella, my daughter, just started getting into it. She's 19. She's not like little or anything. But she just started getting into the visual novel thing for herself. You know, she's witnessed me play them before on stream and stuff like that, but she's not really engaged them on her own, like away from me. And so she just recently started a few days ago. And so I started like, you know, I hit her up with all the ones that I was like, Arcade Spirits. I immediately was like, okay, I got this one. I got Animal Lover. I've got Dream Daddy. I've got like all these more recent ones here for you. Like, go for it. She's a little bummed because like it's on my computer. And it's like just to, like hang out on my computer. But so then I was like, okay, well, she's got a Switch. You know, she's got a PlayStation. I was like looking and I looked on Switch. And there's a ton of visual novels there, right?
There's so many. Yeah.
So many. But then I looked on PlayStation, on PS4, and there's a lot. But there's two very weird, crazy differences between the systems. There's a lot more otome on Switch than you can even remotely find on PS4.
That's really interesting because I feel like, like I was talking about, the PSP was like the system. Like I got a PSP to play one Crisis Core and two Otome games.
Right.
Like that was it. Right. And I was like, that's my entire collection of PSP games right there.
Right.
But yeah, I would expect like better coverage from PlayStation because they've always toted like otome games.
No, what you're gonna find on PlayStation is, I don't know, what do they call, my brain can't remember, what is the male version where it's like male protagonist.
I
never remember.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the male protagonist harem, like ones with the girls, that is hardcore on PS4. Now Switch, there's a couple, you know, there's a small handful. We'll give you a little trail mix, you know, of those if you want them, but we know who's here. And who's here are the ladies.
Yeah.
And they want a bevy of young men's to choose from. And I was like, well, Bella, listen, I mean, there's a couple games on, like, Code Realize is on PC.
Yes! Oh my god, I love Code Realize!
I just picked it up for her. Because I was
so
like,
so good.
I was like, I know you're gonna love this. I got that one for her, so she's got that. It's like a bundle, so like she's good to go on that one. Mm-hmm. And then I go to look on Switch because I'm like, well, this is portable, you know. Maybe we'll check this out on Switch. It's like the pickings are weird, real weird. Like there's a lot more murder mysteries with female protagonists.
Mm.
Not a lot of romancy stuff. And that was another weird difference.
Well, they're more they're more like kind of like detective tales and like trying to like, I don't know, like
a lot of mysteries,
a lot of mysteries, but a lot of like, you know, finding like what's in like a group of items kind of thing. And like a lot of like little puzzles like that.
Oh, the hidden item.
The hidden item stuff. That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But the visual novel stuff, it's a lot of murder mysteries and there's a lot of like, survival-y horror ones or like school ones where it's like we're at a school and something's amiss.
Yeah.
Not really so much romancy stuff as you would think. But then, so like, I'm like setting her up with all these and I'm going, this is so weird that different systems have different, like it's like tailored.
I mean, yeah. I wonder if like a lot of that has to do though with the fact that with Animal Crossing now on Switch, there's going to be like a huge uptick of women playing on Nintendo Switch as well. So maybe like those like developers maybe realizing that, trying to take advantage of that factor.
I would say that it does seem like when I, because first off, the Switch is prime territory for a lot of like mobile game shovelware kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And it's almost a problem. Like you really have to like tear through the weeds to get the good stuff in there. And with visual novels, it's not the most easy, even using the search terms, to find those titles. And then when you've got a bunch of trash in there littered among the good stuff, it makes it even harder, right?
I mean, the eShop is like really difficult to navigate around and like
it find is exactly so what you're looking
for. Yeah.
Really difficult. And so when I was doing searches for it, everything that came up was exactly what I searched for on PlayStation 4. And the differences were night and day. It was very fascinating. Like you would have a couple titles that were very kind of popular and well known. Mm-hmm. And there were a few that were kind of a little spicy out there. You know, you're just like, wow, okay, all right, Nintendo. And then you go on PlayStation, it's like, oh, you want to see the inside of a person?
Yeah.
Let's go. Here you go.
There's anatomy class over here. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very interesting that I was like, and my daughter's like, she's an adult, you know? She's a voting age at this point, and I'm sitting here going, I don't know about this one.
So I guess with that said, though, what would you say makes dating sims so popular in that case?
Romance in general has always been popular, I feel like. Right. I mean,
well, yeah, but I mean, like, I guess like dating, I guess like dating sims in general, though. So like, what gravitates people towards them?
I think it's the same aspect of almost like Animal Crossing in a sense that it's just some game, right? There's no stress to be like, oh, I've got to make sure that I kill all the zombies. You know, I have to solve the murder mystery. It's very chill in terms of gameplay for the most part. And there's not a lot of pressure for the player to do the right thing because most of the time, you know, there are some wrong things, but most of the time in dating sims, it's all about that experience. And I feel like most people in general like making connections with people. And this is a way to do that. You get to make a connection. You get to build a romance. You get to fall in love with these characters. And it's fun, right? Like, who doesn't want to go out on a fun date with somebody, you know?
Absolutely. I think it's interesting because I'm like the weird parent that pushes my kid towards video games like hard, mm-hmm. like real hard. And she's a writer. She loves writing. She's a reader, loves reading. She loves movies and television and all of these like, you know, kind of not really romance-y stuff, but like, you know, her age range. You know, a lot of television is geared towards romance
and drama.
Right. And it kind of steered her into, you know, kind of reading fan fiction that was written about these characters that she was mm-hmm. invested in. And I was like, you know, but there's something about fan fiction that like, I get it. But then also, what if you got to see this stuff play out in front of you?
Mm. Yeah.
I was like,
with pictures and images moving around and all that stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And so I was like, there are these things called visual novels. And I was like telling her so hard about them. And I was like, that'll scratch that kind of fan fiction-y itch, but you're engaging. You know, like you're not reading something somebody else made and like you have no touch to it. Like you're not actually able to shift or change the narrative. In these games you can, right? So like it's not like you're consuming, you know, you're kind of crafting it around your own narrative as well.
Yeah, well, I guess like in those cases though, you basically like apply yourself into that role basically, because like you're making like the decisions, you're choosing who you interact with and how you interact with them and all that. So yeah,
and let me say there, I feel like I didn't connect with visual novels really intensely until this game, because I started streaming visual novels a couple of years ago, and I called it Visual Novelty, and I would get a couple I'd get a couple of my friends and we would read the lines out. So like we would play the game in real time reading it, and everybody would take a part and we'd have a blast. And I got a PR code for a game called Animal Lover. And in the press release, it said, "This is not a furry game."
Okay. I was going to say, like, that can go in many different ways.
I laughed so hard over this press release because as soon as I saw visual novel Animal Lover, I was like, ew, come on, what are you doing? And then I saw, don't worry, it's not a furry game. And I was like, all right, I'm in. All right, so.
But wait, that's like a shitty press release. Too, because like now you're just excluding all of your furry like people, like that's, it's like, come on.
I get it, but also I thought it was funny because there's plenty of people who were gonna read that and go, oh, it's a furry game, I'm good. And then they were like, no, we know that'll happen, we named it Animal Lover.
I mean, so. It could be like the Beastars of like visual novels in that case. Like, I'm not they're a furry, like, but
they're like, we're not trying to yuck your yum or nothing, but they ain't no furries. And I was tickled by it. Again, wasn't a huge fan of visual novels. I just had fun with them, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the first one where I was like, oh no, they are telling me some shit. Like, this is a full-fledged medium. You know, and we spent 13 weeks with that game. Did we need to? No. But because we're yappy, we stretched a game that I think takes about 4 hours to complete into
4 weeks.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is one of the best written visual novels. I would say up there with Arcade Spirits, up there with Dream Daddy. It is so incredibly written. The writer and artist are like, they're a couple. And
that's cute.
It is so sweet. It is such a deep game. It is so heavy and intense. And the characters that you can romance in it are also well thought out and fleshed out. And the story is unlike anything I've ever played. And I'm sitting there playing it. And at the end of it, when it was over, and we even had the guy who wrote it come onto our stream at some point. Mm-hmm. He didn't know that people would be streaming his game. And so he came on Twitch and saw that we were doing it. And he was like, oh, all right. So he just started hanging out. And then we brought him onto the stream to voice some of the characters.
Nice. Oh, that's so cute.
It was really funny, too, because I catch some of the little tiny like editing errors. And I'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I actually have not played it, and I'm purchasing it right now. Dude, I'm telling you, you
will get to the end of that game and be in awe that a game that is that cute, and it is very cute, can be as intense and like heartfelt and like make you feel some shit as that game did.
That's great. Because
everybody in my chat was crying at the end of this game. It was great. So anyway, at that point is when I kind of knew that like this is a full-fledged entertainment medium that needs to be ventured into more.
The floodgates open at that point for you, yeah.
It is a beautiful space to bridge reading and video games and movies and like all forms of entertainment into this one space, especially for young people. I think there's so many young people who could benefit from like kind of feeling out these experiences like this. You know, is one of the things that I loved with my daughter playing these games is like she can experience these kind of emotions and understandings and like go through these scenarios in a very healthy way.
Well, I mean, like the thing is, like with me anyway, because like I haven't played too many visual novels, honestly, but they've always intrigued me. And I've certainly played the fair number of them, especially Arcade Spirits more recently. And like the thing that always gravitated me towards them, honestly, is thinking back to when I was a kid and having those choose your own adventure books, like especially with Goosebumps and things like that.
Yep.
And so it just always kind of brings me back really to that time of like being able to flip through the pages. And all of a sudden you get to like a point where you have to like make a decision. It's like, oh, crap. I was like, OK, skip to page 59 or whatever, like in order to get to this or whatever. And I always like enjoyed that. And also the fact, too, if the visual novel actually kind of takes place in a setting that like kind of like appeals to me, obviously with like Arcade Spirits, like old school arcades. And that's what I grew up on. So it makes sense for me in that case.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, but also seeing like all the different personalities like in that game, specifically in your game, man. You know, that really kind of reminded me. It's like, oh, I know a guy who's exactly like that, or like I know a girl who's exactly like that if she was like into like this specific genre of game or whatever it may be.
Right.
And so like just kind of seeing that, because like there was like the DDR guy, basically there was like the dancing game guy in there, and there's Queen Bee, who I especially enjoyed. and you know, kind of seeing that like kind of like intense personality in like a woman who is also very clearly has like her insecurities that she hides very well, really kind of like appealed to me. And like I think a lot of that honestly like has to do with like the writing, you know, to kind of like attribute that to you there, Anne. It was just like absolutely amazing, like in that regard. But the thing is the truth of the matter really is that there are a lot of really poorly written visual novels out there.
Oh yeah, I've read a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, like finding the good ones is like truly a treat, and like that's where I think like the word of mouth really kind of comes into play, and having like the rating system and all that stuff, you know, especially with Steam and all that. It really kind of goes like a long way when you do have characters that you can certainly see people who you know in real life in them and be able to apply that, you know. So I figure we'll also kind of get into some of our favorite memories dating in games. Now this doesn't have to just be from dating Sims. It could be like any game that has like some sort of like dating mechanic in it, or just like characters who you can date or whatever. So Anne, let's have you start on that.
I'm not sure if I would classify this as my favorite, but it is definitely the most memorable for me, and I will never forgive Solas for what he's done. talking about Dragon Age Inquisition.
Of course.
And I feel like
you need to stop talking about my husband like this.
I'm okay. Wait, is Solas your husband too?
Yeah, absolutely. Are we the same person?
I think we are. like officially the same person.
Did we become best friends? Yep.
Yeah, it's like a Silent Hill situation where like we were one person, and then at some point it like split into twine, and now we're two halves of a being that are desperately trying to come back together again.
Totally.
I think we've done it.
Yeah. It's today. But yeah, so Dragon Age Inquisition, and I've played like all of the BioWare games, and BioWare games to me have always had a huge impact on one, my writing, and just like how I am as a game developer, because they've just been so impactful. I've crafted so many like bonds with these characters, and they mean so much. But then Dragon Age Inquisition came along, and I like, as soon as they released like all the characters, I looked at Solas and I was like, what the fuck? You can't have a bald elf. Like, that's most of the appeal of elves, is their beautiful long hair. Yeah. And I was like outraged.
Just messing
with
you.
I was like, yeah, I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to date the elf in this game because he's got no hair. And then I talked to Solas and I was like, oh my God, I'm in love. Like, he's talking about dreams. Like, he's so like such an asshole. And like, and I was just like, I was smitten instantly. I was like, okay, I take it back. You're bald and I love you. It's fine. We can make this work. And I fell so hard for this character. And then for everyone that's not played Dragon Age Inquisition, please turn off the podcast for the next 30 seconds. I don't want to spoil it for you. And then he breaks your fucking heart.
Yeah.
And I have never been more angry and more heartbroken by a video game character than I ever have by Solas. And I'm still not over it. Like, I can't wait for Dragon Age 4 so I can, like, fuck Solas and then fucking kick him in the dick. Because I am, like, I have so many feelings for this character that, like, I did not see any of it coming, and I just was so attached and so being like, oh, I'm going to love this character, and we're going to have babies, and we're going to like save the world together. And then he just breaks your fucking heart, and I was just like, what? What did you just do to me? But yeah, that was probably my most memorable dating moment in games, because it to this day, it still has left such an impact on my life.
I am still bent out of shape that I did not get to romance James Vega. And
oh yeah.
Oh, and Mass Effect 2, was it?
Yes, yes. And they're like, you know, don't worry, like we're gonna have some DLC or whatever. It's like, no, I've already played the game. Like, we don't need this. This is stupid. let me have it the first time and let me have it at all. It's like, whatever. And then Dragon Age comes out and they're like, Iron Bull though. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, no. And I was so angry about this, I tweeted at Freddie Prinze Jr. I was like, what is your problem, bro?
What did you do to me?
And then he retweets it going, this is a true gamer right here. But like, I was so frustrated. I was like, stop making all these rad characters in games where I can bone them, but then make it so I can't bone them. Mm-hmm. I'm not even one of those like crazy thirsty people, but like those characters were phenomenal. And I'm like, let's do this. And then I was like, just keep me away from Solas because he's bad for me, you know? But like, I love him. And then I'm like, all right, Iron Bull, let's do this. And Iron Bull's like, yeah, no, I'm okay. Like, I don't like you like that. And that's fine.
Who did you play as in Dragon Age? Because I thought that Iron Bull like would romance you if you were anybody.
No, because you have to be either of Iron Bull's race or a male.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I wasn't. And I was like, do I really want to go back and start over just for this? I was like, no, that's not right. We're not going to let him James Vega us. I'm not doing this.
Becomes
with
a verb
him.
Now, all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to like go replay the game just for this. I'm not that thirsty. And yeah. I was like, fine. So, Liz, like, let's just, we'll figure this out. And then Solas does all that. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Yep.
Yeah. So I would say that's my most memorable experience of that. And I still have not gotten what is rightfully owed to me. And so when the next game comes out, Freddie, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, figure it out, dude. Yeah. All right? Just figure it out.
We'll have to get Freddie on like the show at some point so he can like, you know, confront him on this whole thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
I will say from a developer standpoint, I feel like there's a huge debate in like dating sims or like romance elements in gaming where you have your characters who you can date, they're either player sexual, meaning like they will date the player no matter what, or you have like the characters, they have their own sexuality, you know, they're attracted to certain people. And if you don't fit in, much like BioWare, like if you are not of the certain race or like gender, like you cannot romance. And I feel like that's a huge, not a rift, but I feel like that's a discussion that's always happening. To me, like I prefer player sexual characters because I was like, listen, I want to bone everybody, and I think everyone should want to bone me all the time. So I like that freedom of not having those restrictions of like, I will not be falling in love with this character because this character, it won't appreciate me if I'm not a male, right?
Right. Well, it's kind of like the power fantasy, like I play there as well, like with video games in general. Like, and that's usually reserved for like action games, like being able to shoot everyone, whatever. But like in this case, it's like I want everyone to want to bone me, basically.
Yeah, yeah. But I also see the other side of the argument where like these characters are their own people, essentially, and they're going to be attracted to who they're attracted to, and they have their own personality, they have their own gender, you know?
Right.
And I respect that as a writer as well because these are characters that people have written. So it's like a huge, like, to me it's just a really fascinating topic of where people lie and like what are people's points and how people make their dating games, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think as a writer, I think it's really cool to have my story be told the way that I want it to be told, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But as somebody who plays games, my brain goes, I just want to do the thing. Let me just do the thing. Like, I know you're trying to tell a story, but I'd like to do the thing. Can I do the thing?
Totally.
And it's like trying to find that balance, I think is something that you're never going to fully get. Like the balance between telling the story you want to tell and making a game compelling with that story where everybody's happy and you feel like your story is still being told in a way that suits it, is that's always going to be, I think, the battle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally.
100%. Yeah.
I would say like for me, and I really had to kind of like think about this, but like the one thing that really kind of came to mind was the Persona games. And I love the Persona games.
Persona's so good.
So good. And so like with the Persona games, obviously like a big element of that is being able to build like confidants and build like relationships basically with like the characters. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can like date some of those characters. So I was kind of like thinking back on like the characters who I would like instinctively want to romance basically in those games and kind of like thinking about like, oh, what does that say about me? So I wasn't quite sure, but Anne, maybe you can kind of like help me out with this a little bit. So in Persona 3, I remember going with Mitsuru. It was like a red hair girl, you know?
Yep. She's badass.
She is a badass. Yep. Persona 4, I went with Yukiko. So that's the one with the red, like she wears like all red and she has like kind of like that fire persona and everything. And then in Persona 5, there's Makoto. So The one thing that kind of like came to mind is that like all of these like characters are very like studious, but like they secretly kind of have like this like badass like kind of like secret side that they always like kind of try to hide from everyone else. So, and obviously like that's like an element anyway, like for like, you know, for like every character basically in Persona, like they have like a secret side that they can try to keep hidden. But with like these characters, I always kind of feel like that they're kind of like put on a pedestal from the outside with everyone kind of like who just kind of sees them but doesn't like actually interact with them. But when you actually interact and get to know those characters, you realize that there's more, I don't know, sensitive like human elements to them that you can easily kind of like break through, and that's always kind of like spoke to me anyway, especially with like, you know, people who I've actually dated who are very much like that, and you kind of like realize it's like, oh, they're not at all what they kind of like portray themselves to be or what other people kind of portray them to be.
I think those are all very good characters, and like when you're saying about Queen Bee, like that reigns true too, in that sort of that sort of genre of character, right? Mm-hmm. Like the person that's famous and everyone looks up to them, but they're like real humans, and you know, it's sometimes hard to be that person that's like, everyone looks up to me, I have to play this part, but secretly on the inside they're insecure and they have a lot of issues going on, and and they have to fulfill this role even though it's not who they want to be.
It's a persona, if you will, that they have to fulfill.
This guy.
Yeah.
Just saying. So we did have some listener responses here as well in regards to favorite memories from dating and games. Starting off here with Jamie Retz Bosworth, who says, Witcher, unicorn.
Yes,
that's all you need to know there. Nalani Briscoe, who says, kissing Johari in Quest for Glory 3, that man-eater, lol. Also Quest for Glory 5, when wooing Elsa and she sneaks into your room and kisses you.
I feel like I need to play these Quest for Glory games. I've not played them.
Yeah, I played the Quest for Glory games like a little bit, but not like full on. I've had on the creators of the game actually on the show at one point. They were super nice. Cool. Yeah, they're like a couple themselves. They actually got to know each other actually through playing D&D together. So it's just kind of funny.
That's so wholesome.
Yeah, they're super cute, and they're like an old couple too, and so like they still have like those characteristics about themselves. It's really nice. So, then there's Thomas Brandt, who says, Kratos's many romances, hitting the right button.
Oh my god.
And the God of War games there. Ladislav Fator, who says, Planescape Torment, when you meet Anna, the tiefling, almost at the start of the game. Love her the entire game, and even at the end, she is still surprised you haven't replaced her with any other girl. Adorable. So I don't know if either of you have played Planescape Torment at all. Or in the Planescape games. No. I mean, the Planescape games I've heard of, I've just never dived into them at all, so I don't know anything about them really, but that does sound adorable though. So Marina Turner here says, the heart events in Stardew Valley are adorable too. So I don't know if either of you can kind of tell me about the heart events, because I didn't go that far in the game. So.
I feel like the heart events are just like, I think I did it with Elliot because sad rider on the beach. Yes, please give me that. I think there was like a moment where like, I think the heart moments are like when you propose or like any romantic little date you have, and they're pretty cute. Like there's no, I feel like when I played Stardew Valley, like everything was very cute and very wholesome. Nothing was like, oh my God, this changed my life forever. But it was just like, oh, this is cute. And this makes me feel good about myself.
Yeah.
So there were definitely a lot of cute moments. And I know a lot of people that have enjoyed like romancing those characters. I always like the fun parts about Stardew after you like romance somebody, and then there's like, because you can romance a lot of people at the same time and then they can find out about each other, and I always like that juicy bit of
right. Goss. So that actually leads into the next comment here, again by Marina Turner, actually, who says, one more thing that comes to mind is playing The Sims back in the day and getting caught kissing someone by their spouse or yours and getting slapped.
Oh, yeah.
Which has definitely happened to me, I know, at least in the, what's the Hot Date expansion, I know, of Sims. Then there's Brandon Selick, who says, dunno if I have a favorite, but the moment I felt the worst was when I had my character in Dragon Age Origins sleep with Morrigan to get the Witches Gone Wild achievement. I then had my character break up with her, pursued Liliana, lied to her about my relationship with Morrigan, and distracted her by giving her shoes. I also don't know what this says about the BioWare devs and their attitudes to women. So, I'm not sure if that's an achievement that you got there, Anne.
No, so wonderful. Like, BioWare games are great. I love them. When I played Dragon Age, the first one, I actually was leading on Zevron and Alistair the whole time. And whenever it ended up being a cutscene, because eventually, like, they find out about the other one and they're like, hey, I saw you flirting with Zevron. Like, what's up with that? And, like, I just couldn't let go of either of those two boys. So I basically was like, whenever I got into a scene where it was like, hey, so you have to make a choice, I would restart the game and not go down that path. So by the end of Dragon Age Origins, I had successfully romanced Zevron and Alistair without ever having that conversation of choosing anybody. And then at the very end, just like, oh, by the way, you ended up with Zevron. I was like, okay, that's fine.
All right. The game shows for you in that case.
Yeah. Nice. So I broke it.
Nice. Then there's Bobby Malone, who says, when I was a kid, I remember playing the Flash games where all you had to do was memorize 10 details about her life to get her into bed. It was a much simpler time, and it turns out those games are liars.
Yeah, that's like creepy.
Yeah. I do remember those Flash games back then, though. They were a lot more rampant. They're still around now, but they were definitely a lot more rampant back then. Then there's Jack Lowe, who says, games that get the subtle romance of reality mixed with high fantasy rather well are Wild Arms 2 and Lunar Silver Star Story.
Oh, Lunar, yeah.
It's less about the anime trope obsession and more about genuine concern for someone you care about and sharing simple moments like eating dinner and coming home. However, an in-depth courtship and learning about others, then I would go with Mass Effect and Baldur's Gate 2. definitely a lot of crossover there for sure. Then there's Vincent Lara, who says, fireworks scene with my boy Snow and Sarah from Final Fantasy 13.
Oh, I haven't played 13.
Yeah. Candace, I think you have, though, right?
They were really pretty, but that game was abysmal.
Yeah.
And it was really hard to focus on the romance aspect of anybody when I was just like, why am I going a straight line? And are these motorcycles doing some sex acts on each other? I couldn't really focus.
Everyone and everything gets their sexy times moment there, yeah.
I'm sorry, when motorcycles start scissoring, my brain kind of like checks out a bit.
Yeah.
Scissor me timbers, all right. Then there's Lauren Fig, who says, the Yuffie Golden Saucer date in Final Fantasy VII is hilarious and absolutely worth the extra effort to get. Highly recommend it. I've never actually gotten that before. I usually end up with like Aerith or Tifa in that case. And I remember trying to go for the like the Barrett one.
I got the Barrett one. That one's good.
Yeah.
That one's real good. I think I've done all of them at some point just because I've played Final Fantasy VII so many times, but it's not like one of those things where I can instantly remember exactly what happened. But I mean, who doesn't want to go on a date at Gold Saucer? Like, that's like, it's a giant arcade. That's my thing.
I know. You jump down 100%. Tubes, and you like end up in a whole other area. It's just great. Yeah. Then there's Dylan Todd, who says, probably rescuing Bastila and confessing your love for each other, even though it's wrong and Jedis can't love, and it hasn't worked out any other time, but it's gonna for you, goddammit. So that is from Knights of the Old Republic. Bastila was definitely my girl back then. I think it was only like her and who's the other one? Caden or whoever.
Caden. Let me tell you about Caden. I'm sorry. I have a lot of bio stories in mind, the way that I play. I've hopefully the devs never actually watch me play their games because it's just a mess. So no, it was Karth. Karth was.
Oh, Karth. Was yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one. KOTOR, I'm very much like, I'm on the dark side. I'm a Sith Lord. Like, I'm cool. Don't mess with me.
It's a redhead in that case.
Yeah, exactly. And Karth, of course, is the good guy who's just like, I want to fall in love. The main like romance, you know, if you're playing
only
a lady.
If I find the right girl, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Very pure. And I was just like, God damn it, he's my only option for dick right now. So I guess I gotta do this.
Right.
So I basically fell in love with him. But at the very end, once again, if you have not played KOTOR, turn off the headset for the next like couple minutes. He is like, he found out I was a Sith Lord and was very upset because I was evil. And he's like, no, like, this is bad. Like, you can be good. And I was like, no, I think I'm going to continue to be bad. And then Karth is like, well, then you're just going to have to kill me. And I was like, fine, done.
That's what I want to do anyway.
Like, yeah, I was like, easy as peanut butter and jelly. I was just like, done. I made this poor boy fall in love with me, confess his love to me, and like want to live with me forever. And then I broke his heart, and it was, I guess this is why Solas is revenge for Karth. I figured it out. God damn it.
It all comes full circle in that case.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go. And then there is Drew Bonnier, who says, honestly, the unspoken attraction between the two main characters in Firewatch, both trying to escape the reality of their situation, feels so much more real compared to any other romantic substory in any other game I've played. Mm-hmm. They managed to portray it so well only through audio over a radio. So, yeah, because I know that was like one thing actually that like a lot of people who love Firewatch, that was like the one thing that they really grabbed onto, just like that relationship and just how subtle it was, really, like the undertones of it. So
yeah, Firewatch is amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Then there is Jared Wicker, who says, one moment that stands out to me is Dragon Age Origins and Zevron. He's a very promiscuous little cut purse that is down for pretty much anything. And I'll say that even though my male lead character on my first playthrough was taken off guard by his flirtatious advances, guess who got the shiny new achievement for having a romance with Zevron? I only did it for the gamer score, I swear, and I felt so dirty afterwards. Then there's like a response here from Dahlia Tebakrani, who says, Alistar wouldn't date me until I made it clear to Zevron we were no longer a thing, which surprised me because I wasn't used to games having memories even that short. I played Dwarf Noble, and I swear the most hilarious team chatter was with Alistair and that other really crude dwarf guy. You know what's really what's great about dwarf women? Their legs are short. You get to the good part faster. So thank you everyone for sharing your favorite gaming dating moments there. So definitely a lot of good ones there.
Choose your character.
That's going to lead us now into our part of the show here called Random Select, which is a yes or no 15 question game to guess which video game character that I am this week. So basically, it's going to be you, Anne, and Candace acting as a team to guess which video game character that I am. And so you have 15 questions, and whenever you're ready, you can start.
What game are you from?
Well, it has to be a yes or no question.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Okay, listen, I tried to cheat. I'm sorry, I'm bad at
you gotta wake up pretty early in the morning to catch me with that one.
Okay, like, oh, before we start this, though, like, video game character. Do you know how many video game characters there are?
There are. Do we get any, like, I always make sure I choose a character that I know at least my guest would absolutely know.
Okay.
So I'll just say that.
Are you Sephiroth?
Yes, actually, I am.
Yes, I am the best in this game. Yo,
you got it in one right there, Sephiroth. I just kind of had to feel, it's like, you know what, let's try Sephiroth. You know, see how long it takes for Anne to get in. Like, no less. First question, are you Sephiroth? You got it. So, awesome job there. Awesome job there. Nice job there, Candace.
Yeah. Are you a male?
Yeah. I think so.
Sorry, I just wanted to feel like I was, like, involved.
Yeah, there you go.
You are, because you're part of me, and I'm part of
you. That's right.
Oh, there you go. I feel better together. Now. Yeah. I feel better now.
We are together. Okay. There you go. All right, and just want to give some shout-outs here to our patrons who are $2 and up. There's Francisco Limas, Mac the Ball, Michael Butler, and Rosaline Della Russo. So thank you very much, everyone, for helping support the show. And if you, too, would also like to support the show, you could check us out at patreon.com/rcast, where you can see all the different perks there that you could buy into. So thank you very much for helping support the show. If you'd like to send us any feedback, opinions, retro games, or topics for us to cover, or anything at all, really, you can email us at rcast@retrozap.com. And be sure to check out RetroZap.com for all sorts of other amazing podcasts. It's your home away from home if you're crazy about Star Wars, Animaniacs, or pop culture in general. There's also us with Arcast, so be sure to find us on iTunes to subscribe, give us 5 stars, and tell your neighbors. We're also on Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So there's absolutely no reason to not follow another retro gaming podcast. And where can people go in order to find you online?
Oh, geez. You can find me at Peachy Enna, or if you follow me on Twitch, I like to stream games as well. It's Sharky Enna, and that's mostly it. Or at Arcade Spirits VN.
There you go. And how about you there, Candace?
As per usual, I'm Candace Likes You on Twitter. Candace loves you on Twitch. I'm a lot nicer on Twitch than on Twitter. I will be making the Rodeo Chronicles happen here very soon.
I'm so excited.
If I can't get rid of him. Watch, because I started planning a thing where I might benefit from it, he's going to leave tomorrow.
I mean, we might need to make like a segment of this show just be Candace Island and just have it just be chronicles of what's going on your Animal Crossing Islands.
I mean, I accidentally have been doing it every time you invite me on anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. There you go. And you can follow ArcCast on Twitter at ArcPodcast. Same thing on Facebook, facebook.com/ArcPodcast. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheGuiltyMan. And that is episode 206 of Arcast in the Books. Until next time, keep it retro.
Hi, this is John J.P. Podlasek of Game Dev Advice. I'm a 30-year veteran of the game development industry and have a podcast where I interview artists, animators, programmers, designers, CEOs, and all different types of people that work in the game development industry. Whether you're an aspiring or an experienced game developer, you'll find useful, thought-provoking, and sometimes funny advice on the podcast, so check it out.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.